Looks like everybody's exhausted from the weekend. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Continuing, Canto 3, Chapter 17, Victory of Hiranyaksha, Text 16. These two demons, the Hiranya brothers, who appeared in ancient times, soon began to exhibit uncommon bodily features, semicolon. They had steel-like frames, ashma. Sarena, Ashma. It's the same as in the second canto. The steel-framed heart, Ashma is used. Steel, metal, hard, iron, but steel. They had steel-like frames, which began to grow, just like two great mountains. Purport. There are two classes of men in the world. One is called the demon, and the other is called the demigod. The demigods concern themselves with spiritual upliftment of human society, whereas the demons are concerned with physical and material upliftment. The two demons, born of Diti, began to make their bodies as strong as iron frames, and they were so tall that they seemed to touch outer space. They were decorated with valuable ornaments, and they thought that this was success in life. Originally, it was planned that Jai and Vijay, the two doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, were to take birth in this material world where, by the curse of the sages, they were to play the part of always being angry with the Supreme Personality of Godhead as demoniac persons. They became so angry that they were not concerned with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply with physical comforts and physical upliftment. Text 17. Their bodies became so tall that they seemed to kiss the sky with the crests of their golden crowns. They blocked the view in all directions and, while walking, shook the earth at every step. Their arms were adorned with brilliant bracelets, and they stood as if covering the sun with their waists, which were bound with excellent and beautiful girdles. Purport, in the demoniac way of civilization, people are interested in getting a body constructed in such a way that when they walk on the street, the earth will tremble. And when they stand, it will appear that they cover the sun and the vision of the four directions. If a race appears strong in body, their country is materially considered to be among the highly advanced nations of the world. Text 18. Kashyapa, Prajapati, the creator of the living entities, gave the twin sons their names. The one who was born first, he was named Hiranyaksha, and the one who was first conceived by Diti, he named Hiranyakashipu, which meant he was born second. Purport. There is an authoritative Vedic literature called Pinda Siddhi, in which the scientific understanding of pregnancy is very nicely described. It is stated that when the male secretion enters the menstrual flux of the uterus of the two into successive drops, the mother develops twin embryos in her womb and she brings forth twins in reverse order to that which they were first conceived, semicolon. The child conceived first is born later, and the one conceived later is brought forth first. The first child conceived in the womb lives behind the second child, so when birth takes place, the second child appears first and the first child appears second. In this case, it is understood that Hiranyaksha, the second child conceived, was delivered first, whereas Hiranyakashipu, the child who was behind him, having been conceived first, was born second. Text 19. The elder child, Hiranyakashipu, was unafraid of death from anyone within the three worlds because he received a benediction from Lord Brahma. He was proud and puffed up due to this benediction and was able to bring all the three planetary systems under his control. Purport. It will be revealed in later chapters, as it will be revealed in later chapters. Hiranyakashipu underwent severe austerity and penance to satisfy Brahma and thus received a benediction of immortality. Actually, it is impossible, even for Lord Brahma, to give anyone the benediction of becoming immortal, but indirectly, Hiranyakashipu received the benediction that no one within this material world would be able to kill him. In other words, because he originally came from the abode of Vaikuntha, he was not to be killed by anyone within this material world. The Lord desired to appear himself to kill him. One may be proud of his material advancement and knowledge, but he cannot be immune to the four principles of material existence, namely birth, death, old age, and disease. It was the Lord's plan to teach people that Hiranyakashipu, who was so powerful and strongly built, could not live more than his destined duration of life. One may become so strong and puffed up as Hiranyakashipu and bring under his control all the three worlds, but there is no possibility of continuing life eternally or keeping the conquered bhuti forever. So many emperors have ascended to power and they are now lost in oblivion. That is the history of the world. This message Prabhupada would repeat many times. Napoleon and Hitler and Stalin and, you know, cultures around the world. This dynasty, that dynasty. They came and they're gone. Where is that person now? Who can say? Where is the dynasty of the etc., etc., etc. And yet people continue on the same path, although the history shows antavattu palam tesham, the fruits of their endeavor is limited and temporary. So udhara di, an intelligent person. There are lots of persons not intelligent. Intelligent persons look for something that's not temporary. And that's what we're hearing in these purports here. The these two classes, and Prabhupada is speaking in very general terms, maybe even very liberal terms, that in this world, so in this world doesn't just mean earth planet, it means within the creation, there are these two classes, demons, demigods. It's a whole chapter in Bhagavad Gita dedicated to divine and demoniac nature. And the dividing line, I heard it many times in lectures, Prabhupada would say the principle is very simple. Just ask one question. Do you accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The answer is no. Demon. I mean, I'm the authority of Scripture. And the answer is yes, devotee. Or here he's using the term demon, demigod. Sura, asura. So demigod, just like the word sadhu, has its narrow and broad meaning. Sadhu in a broad sense means a devotee. So welcome sadhus for morning class because you're devotees and thus sadhus. And the more strict or narrow definition is those are highly elevated in spiritual understanding and a life of spiritual pursuit. So that's the sadhu. And then the demigod, the persons that accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the purpose of life is pursuit of that which is not temporary, or pursuit of that which is eternal. I mentioned at the Sunday feast lecture at the temple yesterday evening in Detroit, this college student, PhD student, by his own words, very successful in his academic pursuits, and part of his intelligence has a spiritual dimension, and that is recognizing fear and selfishness drive him. And he wants to know how to get on the other side. So this is the sign of a devotee, that there's the material world and we deal with it. We deal with it in a proper, responsible, effective way, but not overly attached to it and the results of it and so on. But rather, so how is that possible? Because we're contaminated and conditioned souls. The mind goes towards the material side. So there has to be an impetus of seeking the eternal. Has to be. So for us, seeking the eternal is clear. It's Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. Loving service to Krishna. For persons who don't know Sri Krishna, their impetus has to be something that's less clear, like happiness, or endless happiness, not the happiness that is limited and temporary. But demons, so that's the demarcation. Demons don't have that. Now, drill down a little bit, and those that don't take shelter of Krishna but want this unlimited happiness, Prabhupada is very clear, that's also a demon. In one sense. It's a transcendentalist in another sense. Those are aspiring for Brahman. Sometimes Prabhupada would go on this side, sometimes he'd go on that side. That is to say, Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahor Vimuktes. In that verse by Rishabhdev, the word mahat means great soul. Mahat sevam dvaram ahor vimuktes. By serving the mahats, that's the dvaram, the doorway, the gateway to liberation, going beyond the restrictions of the material existence. And Prabhupada explains there's two classes, those the personalists and the impersonalists. So in that case, he's attributing the characteristic of mahat to an impersonalist, or not an impersonalist, it's those who are seeking Brahman, and not the cheating way of seeking Brahman by just simply negation, covered voidism method, but those that are seeking Brahman genuinely. And those who are elevated in that, that's the mahat. Mahat sevam dvaram ahorvi muktis. And then other cases, the last snare of maya. So you can't have a person who's snared by maya being a mahat or a sadhu. They're in this other category. So largely, people are misdirected. Even amongst spiritual seekers, misdirected, largely, and misdirected by persons who really shouldn't be in the position of teachers but are taking the position of teacher. Somewhere along the way, I met somebody, I don't know if I should, I'll say, in the place they grew up in India, they had a teacher. And their teacher was fond of speaking of trees. And trees can be worshipped, trees can be embraced and can give you this and that. Now there are things in Ayurveda, there are things within the Vedas, within the Ayurveda section of the Vedas, how beneficial trees can be, you know, touching them, contacting them, etc., etc., etc. But it's not, that's not, a conception of divinity is not a tree. And the teaching of the teacher was divinity, or, you know, have that, this superlative respect to trees. Now, I don't know if that's exactly what this teacher was teaching, but that was the representation given to me. And it's not surprising that the world is, that the spiritual marketplace is filled with abundant ideas. I'm planning to develop a little seminar series on conceptions of divinity, because it's important to understand, especially for newer devotees, to understand the spiritual marketplace used to be more simple here in America. It was, you know, monotheism, just different versions of it. You know, within the Christian group, you know, different versions of Christianity, Catholicism, and Protestantism, different conceptions according to the Protestants, and even amongst the Catholics, different conceptions, and then Judaism, and it was pretty simple. And it's now become much more complicated. So necessity is conceptions of divinity, please. Because where do you take shelter if you have that spiritual inclination and abundantly available? Besides, the variety and range of conceptions is impersonal. So back to the topic, the demon category, here it's Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they're really clear. They're not only against, as we're hearing in the purport, they're not only against the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they're so advanced in demoniac mentality that they're just ignoring altogether, and they're building their strength and their capacities and their conquering ability and controlling ability, not explicitly and consciously in opposition to the personality of Godhead. So many persons who are in that category of demons, they're not expressing atheism, they're just living the life of expanding their temporary empire, whether it's governmental or personal or knowledge, base, something. Their little empire. Ravindra Sri Prabhu calls it, everyone has their God project. And there's different versions of it. So the emphasis in the Bhagavatam and the emphasis in Bhagavad Gita is to lead the people of this world to the divine side. Something like the sun has the power to draw plants towards the sun. I don't know if you've ever done this before, I've done it. You leave the plant by the window and the leaves grow towards the sunlight. So turn the plant around like 180 degrees, wait a while, like some weeks or whatever, and the plant, instead of leaning now that way, away from the window, leans again towards the window. Because they require, as part of their vitality, they require sunlight. And so they stretch and reach towards the sunlight. Same for bringing out the divine quality. It requires jyoti. Jyotir gama. This Vedic phrase, tamasi ma jyotir gama. It's been explained, I assume it's correct, that the tamasi ma jyotir gama, that's where the back to Godhead phrase comes from. Jyotir gama, back to Godhead. And tamasi ma, stay from away from darkness. Go to the light. Bhagavatam is drawing us to the light. So what's the light? The light is ultimately, the ultimate conception is Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is drawing us there. So to help us understand and be attracted, there's this, you know, we're getting here this anatomy of a demon. What's it like? So these are mega demons. Prabhupada's saying in this age there's no Hiranyakashipus and Hiranyakshas. There's tiny Hiranyakashipus. So, but the principle doesn't change. It's so here we're getting the stark manifestation of demoniac mentality. In Bhagavad Gita, it's just we've been discussing this. It's just describing the principle, and then in the Bhagavatam it gives the example of the principle. It's through actual historical narration. Puranic narration is history, the history of these two demons, and here's what it looked like, of course, in this mega degree, mega demon. But the principles of Bhagavad Gita are simply being manifest and displayed, so we can say, oh, that's what it is. And previously in the chapter we heard about the demigods. And the demigods, they had fear of the signs of the time. That signs of the time was there's darkness in all directions in the whole universe. The light of the sun and other luminous objects was being dimmed. And they were afraid. This is review for those that weren't with us the other days. So that's the end of the previous chapter, 16. So what do? They do what the demigods do. They do what suras do. They went to their authority. Lord Brahma, what's going on? And then he explained what's going on. And what the solution is. But Vishnu is going to correct the situation. Oh. So now we can be peaceful. Our fear is gone. They went back to their abodes. Now we're hearing they're taking birth and they're growing and they're manifesting their features. Of course, they can't manifest features without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And no one can achieve something without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, devotee or non-devotee, demon or demigod. No one can manifest anything without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So why is the Supreme Lord sanctioning this? It goes back to, there's multiple answers, but we hear it in the purports here. Because of the curse of the sages. And one of the things that the Supreme Lord does is he upholds the words of the brahmanas. So the brahmanas, the kumaras, made this curse and the Lord is upholding it. Now there's some purpose behind all of that also. We've discussed this. That demons can't achieve what they have achieved without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And there are these two within creation, divine and demoniac natures. So, you know, one of the common questions, you know, God is all powerful and God is all good. So why does he permit the demoniac nature? Just like eliminate it. Just have divine nature. So he's all good and he's all great and all powerful. Why doesn't he do that one? No, that's the spiritual world. And there are living entities that don't want to be part of the spiritual world. So he's fulfilling that intention or that purpose or that desire. Well, maybe he shouldn't do that. Or some people say he made a mistake. Or some people say he should just take away our free will then. This dual lobotomy, and we can't even think free will. And there's only one choice left. But that's not the living entity, and it's not the Supreme Lord. He doesn't interfere with the living entity's free will. So they can properly misuse. So here we are. Here are these two. Now one last thing. Many cases, Prabhupada explains, especially in the seventh canto, this situation of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu being the gatekeepers, giant Vijay, that's exceptional. That is to say, these pastimes of the Supreme Lord they appear again and again in the cycle of the yugas. So the demons Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they appear from time to time in different yugas, but it's not always Jayan Vijay. That's the exception. So we're hearing the exception here, and that's the commentary is consistent with the exception. And we should bear in mind, it's not always Jayan Vijay. In other words, there are persons who have such power, demoniac power, that are not Jayan Vijay. You don't have to be Jayan Vijay to be a demon or to have demoniac power. The Puranic references are vast. And who has the time to go through all that vast literature? Fortunately for our sake, we have acharyas that have that grasp of the scriptures and can explain things in a very direct and simple manner, like it's not always Jayan Vijay that become Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. I'm just going to share something from the other evening, Friday evening. I don't know if those of you that were there remember this, but our host wanted to know a resolution to the contradiction that we find in Canto 10, Chapter 8, where the two Vasus, Drona and Dara, they pray to Lord Brahma to appear in this world and become Krishna's mother and father. And he grants that request, and they become Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj. So the question was, how does that fit in with the fact that we always hear that Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj are eternally Krishna's mother and father in the spiritual world? Contradiction, right? So I said I would research it, and here's a little. Planning to make have a little document to circulate to our program, or at least, you know, give to the to our host, and he can circulate it to people that came to his program. I'm going to increase it a little bit and give the further references. But it goes, it's very simple. According to our acharyas, it's not just their imagination, it's scriptural authority, that Drona and Dara, in the heavenly realm, there are Vasus, just like Grandfather Bhishma. Before he was Grandfather Bhishma, he was a Vasu. And something happened, and he came to this world and became Bhishma, Vasu. So Drona and Dara are also Vasus in the heavenly region. And they are Angsa expansions, according to our acharyas. Angsa, they're small. Angsa and Vibhinangsa, these two terms, small and big. And they're tiny expansions of Yasoda and Nanda. And they have their place in amongst the Vasus. And so the acharyas explained, and they give logic as well, based on the authority, that when they made this request, they entered into the body of Yasoda and Nanda. Because Yasoda and Nanda, they're Shakti Tattva. They're not living entities that underwent some austerity like Prishni and Sutapa underwent austerity. They don't have to become qualified. They're eternally situated in perfection as Shaktis of the Supreme Lord. Drona and Dara are their expansion, and they entered into Yasoda and Nanda. And when Krishna's pastimes were over, the unmanifest pastimes became the situation. Drona and Dara went back to their position as Vasus. Now, the technology isn't explained, like how did it happen. But the principle is given. And there's logic connected. One cannot become qualified to have the original personality of Godhead, because when Krishna appeared in Gokula, not in the prison house of Kamsa, in the prison house of Kamsa was Vasudev Krishna. But in in Gokula, the son of Nanda and Yasoda, you can't become qualified. They're eternally, you can't become Nanda and Yasoda. You can't be a living entity and, hey, I want to be Nanda and Yasoda. Too bad. You can be their assistant, and even Drona and Dara. This is the logic given by Jiva Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha, that they're eternally existing. And therefore, the expansion Drona and Dara had to be their expansion, not that they underwent austerities, become qualified for this service. Not possible. Not possible. And so their request as expansions of Yasoda and Nanda is that they took birth on earth, that is, they entered into the bodies of the already existing Yasoda and Nanda, and when the pastime was completed, that they returned. So that was just a little the springboard for that one was, you know, it's not always Jai and Vijay that are Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. I remember one, here's a Prabhupada story. One of the things that Prabhupada liked to do was teach his disciples humility. So one of the discussions, he asked a question related to this science of pregnancy. So although he was born second, Hiranyakashipu was born second, he was considered the elder brother. Because he was the first one conceived, and therefore the elder brother. Not by much time, perhaps, but the elder brother. So one time Prabhupada was asking, if somebody's birth date is such and such, how many years old are they? And they did the math and gave the number, and he said, you Western disciples, you're so foolish and proud. He said, the life of the living entity begins from the time of pregnancy. And so you have to add another year. You think you're so smart. At least I understood he was teaching them humility. Not to be overly proud of their knowledge of things, of the world. Okay, so see if there's any comments or questions. This morning's verse, yes.
This acceptance of Krishna, one of my understandings is that it's also this unfolding of faith, that there is a theoretical acceptance, but then how am I living my life or addressing the situations of my life?
Well, that's a beginning. It's a beginning.
So one of the things related with fear that I was kind of recognizing is that this aspect of seeing or perceiving a person or a situation as a threat.
As
a threat, a threatening.
A threat, okay.
It takes me in the realm of I have this tendency of excluding that situation or person, if not explicitly, but somewhere in my consciousness, I'm going with an exclusion energy. And one of the things when you were mentioning yesterday in the class about the paraphernalia, that for a devotee, this quality of seeing things as Krishna's paraphernalia, not necessarily wanted or unwanted, too much detachment also is not seen
yes.
properly.
Yes, 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 yes. Congratulations, you're monitoring, you know, this. It arises from fear. It's a threat. This language was discussed yesterday also in one of the questions. You know, my capacity to enjoy is at risk. And, you know, something doesn't read on my screen as enjoyment, and so it's a threat. So I exclude it. Just blank it out. That's our coping mechanism or impersonalism. But it arises from fear, and the fear arises from absorption in duality, say false ego, or the conception of something is meant for enjoyment apart from Krishna. So to correct that tendency, it's not one, two, three. It's not just by saying, I accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Period. There. Like, you know, I accept Christ as my Savior. Period. That's it. You're perfect. Everything's good. There's a lot of work, consciousness-wise, to stay moving in that direction. But, you know, the opposite is if one says no. Demon? No, and of course there's degrees of demoniac mentality, but it's the seed. And largely, people come to the material world because of dvesha towards Krishna. So it's a not a nice place. And then there's different realms, higher, lower realms. Very, very involved, because there's all kinds of mentalities. One of the difficulties for a lot of people is making the distinction between piety and spirituality. In this world, when somebody is going in the direction of mode of goodness, they're considered a spiritual person. Because people don't even know what spiritual is. Oh, they're a spiritual person. And they think of themselves as being a spiritual person. Without the conception of serving the personality of Godhead. Anyway, without elaborating. Another little sharing on this topic is the Pitriloka. I remember as like decades ago trying to find out what's Pitriloka anyways? Where is it? What is it? And how does the whole thing work? Because it's mentioned in a number of places. Pitrinyanti Pitrinvrataha, right in Bhagavad Gita. So, without the detail of that, Pitriloka, according to Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 5, is in the below Patalaloka and above the Garbhadak ocean. That the people that go there are pious. Which sounds like what? People that are pious go to a place that's below the lowest of the hellish planets, but they're pious people. But they're pious, so they're pious, and they enjoy in Pitriloka as pious people enjoy, just like the subterranean heavenly planets. So it's one of those kind of what? Contradiction things. So, in Pitriloka, they want those first. Those that go there want to go there. Not just anybody who's a forefather goes there. Somebody who's a forefather may become an animal, or may become take birth on earth, or may go to the heavenly planets, or may so many maybes. But people that go there want to go there. They worship for the purpose of going there. Being with their forefathers, whether they're there or they're not there, they want to be there with their forefathers. And then once there's two things that can happen, three things that can happen. One, according to the Bhagavatam, the descendant sons, not daughters, for generations are to offer pinda, and pinda is Vishnu Prasad, to the Pitris. And if they do so, then life is very enjoyable, heavenly. And if they don't do so, second option, they suffer miserably. And the third option, according to the Bhagavatam, is they may become Yamadutas, because the presiding deity of Pitriloka is Yamaraj. And when Yamaraj, depending upon variables, may give them the position of Yamadutas, and they really want to get at people that don't observe religious principle. because they had to suffer a whole lot because their descendant sons in generations didn't offer pindo. They suffered, so they wanted to get back. It's not very elevated consciousness. And finally, an option that may happen is, if after many generations, doesn't say how many, that pinda offering goes on, then they can take birth again in the same dynasty that they came from, back on earth and become part of that dynasty. But, so should a devotee? What should a devotee do? This question arose because somebody asked me offline, my grandfather and my father have done this ritual, and now I'm a Krishna Bhakta. Should I do this ritual, not do this ritual? And if I do the ritual, am I going to Pitraloka? Because I want to go to Krishna Loka. So it's the consciousness behind the offering, not the offering. If the consciousness be, so again, this acceptance of Krishna as the supreme, he is the one that's meant to be satisfied by everything, including offering to the forefathers. Not like, I want to be with the forefathers. You do a service for a soul who happens to be part of a family. So there's a Vaishnava way, as far as I understand, to do that kind of ritual. I haven't gotten an answer yet from our Jayananda deity worship minister. But my sense is, because it's Vedic, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Gaya. So, but you know, anyway. Yes.
So one of the things that I'm kind of recognizing that a lot of my time and energy goes in this pattern, because it seems like the trigger, the story keeps changing, but the response of the inner struggle is almost the same with different circumstances.
Mm.
And when that's happening, how, on one side is this acceptance that that's something to do with the inheritance of my psychophysical nature.
Yes.
I attract anxiety like magnet. And at the same time, but then moving progressively toward this acceptance of Krishna in the way that even when I'm limited in the capacity of dealing with the anxiety, but I'm that the face of accepting the lack of face, at least striving to make it shorter so that I'm not losing the shelter taking or doing it at the expense of service.
You're very conscientious, and it's exceptional. So the simple answer is, progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. It's just continuing to cultivate by the, so knowing what a problem is a big part of the solution to the problem. It, whether it's medicine, or I mean health, or and, you know, this situation, the identifying the problem is a big part of the solution. And then the solution has is twofold. It is moving towards the light. It is the cultivation of acceptance of Krishna. Acceptance of Krishna doesn't mean I have to like a certain person's behavior, but I have to like Krishna, who sanctioned that person's behavior. And so that person's behavior is arising from different ways of describing, some pain, or their tendency, long-standing tendency to be involved in the temporary. And so how can I, accepting Krishna and the soul that's part of Krishna, address the soul that's part of Krishna, that may help that soul become relieved of the darkness that is driving that which is causing my fear. Instead of just, so it's, that's a lot of steps. And if it's cultivation, then it just becomes, it happens quickly. Boom, 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 boom. And if there's no cultivation, we get, you know, put in this other space. Like you say, you know, a magnet attracting anxiety. We just get, stay in the anxiety space. So how to get out? It's acknowledging, understanding what's going on, and cultivating. Go to the light, and don't invest so much in the mind going to the anxiety stuff, and the triggers and all of that. But all of this, one of the rules of mindfulness, the popular word these days, is don't run from the anxiety. You face it and see where is it coming from. You know that procedure. And look at where it's coming from. You look right into the jaws of the tiger and take steps in the direction of Krishna. We all have our conditionings, subtle and gross, and the desire to get to Krishna is something we have to actively pursue. So those are some steps. It doesn't happen quickly. Something else? Yeah.
I was reading the other day from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Mm. There also that description which you were mentioning from Krishna Sandarbha is given about Krishna and Sridhapa and Drona. So the same description, I think, some more references. I was wondering another thing in regards to your class. I did hear the which words you were speaking on, but you mentioned Udharadi, so that reminded me the words Sarvakama.
Yeah, that's where it came from.
So. And then you mentioned also how that PhD student was mentioning to you that how he wants to find out, you know, inner happiness, which is not a feeling, even though he has so many academic achievements.
Mm.
And so we know that we are told that we don't preach in a manner where we say wealthy preaching, like the churches have never. You come here, we pray for you for your wealth, we pray for your health, and if you approach Krishna, that things will be solved. But at the same time, Shastra is saying there that if you have a desire, material desire, take shelter of Krishna. He will fulfill that.
Well, not necessarily he will fulfill that. Take shelter of Krishna.
Yeah.
He may remove it. The promise is not he'll fulfill it. Yeah.
Just to clarify from yesterday, so the fear, we talked about fear, so fear is coming from the body. Everyone who has a body, embodied, has fear.
Well, animal, it's one of the four primary animal propensities, and the animal propensities arise because of the body. The soul being embodied is then impelled in a certain psychophysical way because of the covering. And it's our identification with the covering. Not the body itself, it's our identification with the covering. And then fear arises. Absorption in.
And the solution that you give,
the Bhagavatam gives.
Bhagavatam, 11th canto, that was.
Yes.
Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Same as we were discussing over here. Same as we were discussing over here. And it's at the beginning of it is I accept Krishna, and then there's a whole lot of work. Brahminical work. Refining of consciousness work. And then, so then we can get to the point where then devotional service begins. Devotional service, meaning pure. Until then, it's notional. It's, you know, we're not opposed to Krishna. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the great lecture. And I have a question regarding the Krishna's of the past. Because of their austerities, Krishna Yajadapa has given a privilege of having the Vishnu as a child for the three reincarnations.
Right.
And also, if you look at Jaya Vijaya, they have taken birth as three incarnations as the enemy of the Lord.
Mm.
So is it like related, or what are the three reincarnations of Krishna Yajadapa?
No, because the forms of the Lord that appeared as the sons of Vishnu and Sutapa are not connected with those three demons. The numerology is the same, but it's not, they're not connected. Yeah?
I was wondering in regards to, as you were sharing another experience of yours, how you met somebody who was sharing how they learned from the teacher about worshipping tree as a divine, and then we're not sure that teacher was teaching the tree as a divine word, but that somehow the student got that, considering tree as divine. And we have seen that in other cases also mentioned, there'll be like saints who will teach about spiritual life, but later their followers will start taking them as divine, or the teachings in the wrong way. Like,
sure.
There's like Swami Narayan, like, if you read.
Yeah, without the example.
Well, the reason I'm going to give an example because to share that in our case also, there's like Rithviks, which consider that after Shri Prabhupada, there is no other, nobody else qualified enough to give initiation.
Yeah, that's just a clever way of having no authority.
So I was wondering that, you know, even though they are also having Bhagavatam classes, they're also having other programs, where does this happen that one ends up being in a deviation from the main Siddhanta, and how do one protect one from that?
Well, faithfulness. Now, they will claim, that's it. That's whatever we're doing. We're faithful. Then, and that requires ignoring many things. Yes, last question. We're going to end.
Again, about this Jai and Vijay, as you were saying.
Hmm.
So it doesn't have to be Jai and Vijay to take birth as demons. It can be somebody else.
A living entity that becomes a demon. It doesn't have to be. So the Jai and Vijay is the exception, and the rule is the other one. Just to be part of the Lord's pastimes is a privilege. But that privilege may be awarded to someone who's literally a demon and not just Jai and Vijay.
This is where my question is, like, I always see, is it always like when Lord Ram comes, it has to be Ravana and Kumbhakarna?
I don't know the answer to that. From a distance, I would say that's Ram's pastime. But scripturally, there may be some exception to that. I don't know. But as far as I know, it's the Ravana and Kumbhakarna is populated by somebody else besides Jai and Vijay.
Let me put it differently. So when Krishna comes, the pastimes are always like that.
Yes. That's a quick answer. Prabhupada's explanation, it's very clear. The pastimes of the Lord, he uses this language. They're like a spool. Now, my understanding of his language, because he would use it sometimes, like a movie projector, because previously it wasn't digital. It was on a plastic thing, and you run it through a projector, and there's little frames, and that's on a spool. So you run the film, the movie, through the projector, and it comes out, you know, like a movie. So it's like a spool. Then Prabhupada would explain, sometimes there's variegatedness when different incarnations of the Lord come. Sometimes it's a little different, but the basic principle is always the same. There's variegatedness because there's bhava, so the bhavas are being stimulated by the pastime. And so the Lord experiences, and the devotees of the Lord experience the bhava, although there's variegatedness. But the variegatedness is minor, and the spool is the consistent. Yes? 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 Okay. So you're clear? Does that answer your question? Keep going till you're satisfied.
In my mind, like, why the, overall it is the same, some slight variations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the Lord is unlimited and there can be any different kind of pastimes and things,
sure.
Why does it have to fit in this?
Doesn't have to, it's just Him. It's Him. But I explained, it's bhava. He is the source of everything, and He knows how to enjoy. That's one of the things He is. Raso vaisaha. And so there's varieties of enjoyment, and He can do it however He wants. It could be unlimited, but it's stimulations of ecstasy through His pastimes. So there's similarities and there's differences. That's why the similarities is because it's stimulating ecstasies. And He enjoys. You know, there's certain foods that you like.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? If there's certain pastimes Krishna likes, and He's enjoying, so why question Him? Why don't do it differently? He likes. Okay, we're going to end Srila Prabhupada ki.
Sure.